today we have Dr. Jeff Evans and we have Chris Lyon, and these guys are leading up and are launching and have been in business as Envision Global Leadership. And we are just thrilled because you guys are the thinkers. You guys are the drivers in commerce. And anytime that we get to have a conversation with those kinds of people, man, we are all in. So I wanted to just say thanks, guys, for being here. And if you would, take it from the top. Tell us in the audience what it is you do and how you do it.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, I'll do that one. So what we do, we work with corporations mainly, or, you know, businesses, mid to senior level, where we work to have people learn a very critical skill that when people get hired into a company as an engineer or an accountant or an attorney or an MD or whatever role, when they come in, they're hired for their technical skills. Mm-hmm. So that at the after a year of success, you'd say that person wrote good contracts, or they had high quality patient care, or engineered good products. Mm-hmm. As they begin to promote through organizations because of their skill, they go into higher and higher level jobs, which increasingly require influence, relationships, and less technical skill.
Okay.
So the CEO of an engineering company is not out running engineering equations or, you know,
designing. That's right. You know,
but what they have to do is they have to work with shareholders, and they have to work with customers and boards and heads of business units who are leading product lines. So the job skills turned completely relationship top, completely switch. And about the middle of organizations, they hit that wall where suddenly their skill set that they were hired for stops working. So we try and work with those people to develop that skill set to lead people rather than a project or a process. And because, you know, all of those get led by people, but that level, you're just leading the people.
That's interesting. So let me ask you, is this something that you're the person who needs the training is self-aware enough to recognize I need to go out and get that training? Or is this something that the company goes, hey, we've got a batch of 15 really good candidates. We need them to be able to get to the next level.
Great question.
That's a good question. Can I answer that for him, Jeff?
You bet.
So that's really where the rubber hits the road for us, because the answer to that simply is no. What happens is that's when we come in and EGL, Envision Global Leadership, has a suite of really good assessment tools in which we can go in, look at that individual from a behavior standpoint with 10 leadership competencies, go in and look at that individual and go, you know what, here's your strengths, here's your challenges. And so what we can do then is start working on those challenges to take them to the next level, so they become a not only a transformational but a transactional leader and able to move that organization forward. See, in the old days, what happened was we would jump in there. Well, and I say old days, it's still happening today. The alternate route of doing that is we would throw everybody into a room and we would have a rah-rah session of how good things are. And people would tell them about, hey, here's history, here's academic, here's research. And then we'd leave them and say, go forth and prosper. Right. And that would work for about a day. And then all of a sudden, reality would hit and they would throw it out.
Okay.
So we don't use that path. We
assess. So
and
it
then
sounds like
develop, but that development piece is strong on coaching. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds like people may not even be fully aware that they need you right in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So you're coming in and saying, you may not need me. Mm-hmm. Let's do an assessment. I want to find out.
And then they're looking at a report and going, oh, actually out of the 10 categories, I do need help at least in these three. Is it that sort of thing, like the lights go on for them?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Yes, hopefully. Yes. There's the issue with all of that, if I may just add on that.
Sure.
So just imagine that, I don't know, you're right-handed or left-handed. So you've spent your life perfecting your skills with your preferred hand. I mean, it's right-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And some critical moment comes along. Let's say my child comes in and has something in her eye. So I'm speaking from way in my past. My granddaughter comes in and has
there you go.
And she needs help getting it out. well, I'm not going to use my foot to do it or my left hand. I'm going to use the one I trust the most in that moment of criticality. And so people over their years, by the time they get to a mid-level executive, they've been building on these technical skills since they were 6 years old, all the way through school, that in that tough moment, they're going to flash right immediately back to being the smartest person in the room, to having the answer, to be a technical person. And they're going to jump out a role, and it's extremely costly for the organization.
Yeah.
And they won't know it until they fail. So basically, we say at this level, no learning comes without a failure event left on its own, unless we come in and tap them on the shoulder from a corporate sponsorship level. People above them say, you know, I was down there, and this is the toughest lesson you're going to learn, but it really changes. It's different up here. And listen to these folks, because they're going to help you out. So that keeps the organization from hitting those, you know, bad spots.
That's powerful. Yeah.
That is very strong. Yeah. I want to kind of pull out. I heard Chris say something.
Yeah.
You talked about a transformational versus a transactional leader. Walk me through that, because that, I don't know, there was something in me that hit that I was like, I need to know that.
Well, you know, that, so through our assessment, we can actually come up, we have a pretty neat graphic that tells folks exactly where they kind of sit based upon perception of the organization upon them, right? But here's the deal. A decade ago, it was a big deal to be a transformational leader. We're going to hire a transformational leader and take our organization to the next level. You heard it in mission statements, right? Mm-hmm. Now, here's the pro on that. Well, somebody has a good vision. They can empower people. They can influence people. They can start to move. But the problem is, unless you have a transaction, you never get there. So, this is my own viewpoint, and Jeff will probably have his take on this too. But mine is, hey, if I don't have somebody who's transactional enough to drive that organization to the next level, and that is day in and day out making good decisions and pace setting and making sure we have good objectives and that we meet those objectives, transactional, then I am just a good Pied Piper. Right. And so I don't need somebody that's just going to make me feel good every day, because at the end of the day, the organization sits still, even though we have some great ideas.
Right. And so, you know, you might be left with, we just play that one really inspirational video again and again, week after week, as though that's going to be the thing that's going to get the ball further down the field. That makes a lot of sense. So one of the things I noticed on your website was that you said 80 to 95% of senior level job success hinges on relationships and emotional intelligence.
Correct.
Are those the two things that are the real drivers behind why you guys developed this?
Well, I'll speak to the development side. Those are the core competency skills. The reason we drove it was so that organizations work better. We come from a frame of high-performing organizations, successful organizations, which consistently deliver on their mission to all their constituents, shareholders, employees, customers, regulators. And when you look at what makes an organization high performance, we find that those characteristics are most essential. Now, the bonus is that the people who learn how to do this, how to create community, how to create coalitions of effort and energy, they take those skills from their corporate worlds and they go home with them. They do it in their families, they do it in their communities, in their nonprofits.
That's wonderful.
And those corporations, they will also fund educational systems. So, you know, most of our educational programs are driven by what corporations dictate for essential skills. That's why we have so much STEM right now. But it's, you know, you see out in the Bay Area in San Francisco, you see STEAM, which is now where, you know, are you familiar with STEAM? Science, technology, engineering, arts, mathematics.
Okay.
Because what they're realizing is that these, you know, all math and science and no interpersonal, none of the kind of more liberal thinking things that drive innovation create flat one directional organizations.
Right.
So in those areas, high tech, high innovation companies, they're driving back the focus on the arts, humanities, and language and social interaction.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's a small effort.
Right. Well, we're both philosophy majors, so that's that's actually encouraging to us, because we've realized, you know, as much as we should have also picked up a business degree, we do recognize that it is a powerful thing to be able to quickly distill arguments and thought down to key core claims, be able to interrogate whether those things are true or not, and then build from there. And that does seem to be something that we find again and again is lacking in new hires or what have you. And we're fortunate that we found great ones, but it's hard, you know, and we're finding college kids who aren't necessarily equipped with those skills today. So I'm encouraged that they are bringing it back.
Yes, I would, if I were in charge of curriculum development for things that lead to executive roles, it would be very heavy in the arts and humanities. Because that's what drives, I don't mean to sound as political, but liberalism in thought, meaning that if I can explore a new idea, then I have the basis for innovation.
That's right.
Because you cannot do innovation and adaptability with a single focus mindset.
That's right.
And you don't get it out of your own thinking. You get it out of the thinking of others, because none of us are smart enough to run these large companies. Anyway, I'm dominated. So
no,
Chris could add a lot on this.
I love this track of thinking. If you are the guys that are training these large corporations and you have such a backing of the liberal arts, do you get to see, or are you seeing that companies are turning that way? I mean, are you able to see that in play?
I think that they know. One of the things we have to realize is that there is a lot of play with generations that come into this. Okay. And one of the things that I see while I'm out there is that we have folks that are actually retiring. They've done that. And their generation, whether you want to call them baby boomers or Xers, as they start to leave, it seems because of how they came up, they intuitively either leaned towards being very analytical or they leaned towards being social.
Okay.
Right. And so that leaning towards the social side, you saw that their business is what they did. That's what they hung their hat on. That's their life, if you talk about it. And so that relationship piece and the ability to lead people is natural as family. You go to this generation that's coming in today, and we have geared them towards programs in such a strong way that we have a difficult time with the relationship piece of what their job is.
That's right.
And let's get back to it. At the end of the day, if we can't relate to people as a leader, you're going to fail. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man.
And that's, so that's kind of what we're doing. And we have to, and there's a lot of things, self-management goes into that. And, you know, the ability to be, you know, transparent, and the ability to have self-discipline and to be a pay, all that goes into play. But at the end of the day, if I can't communicate that to you, Tim, the company's not going to work.
How behind are we?
It depends.
That's a good question. Relative to what?
it is a subjective stance. I mean, relative to, I guess it would go to the organization, but relative to your personal take on where we should be, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, if I can jump in real quick, one of the things that is concerning to me, we live in a university town. And when you walk across campus, everybody's heads are down and they've got things in their ears and they're just, you know, scrolling. And this is not the sort of activity that increases your empathy, increases your ability to interact with somebody from a completely different culture. I mean, in a way, it's an amalgam. Digital life creates an online culture and a way of being that is fundamentally different than the way that we actually should be interacting over a cup of coffee, say. So I would imagine you guys have a massive pool of people who are going to need your services in the years to come. I mean, it looks like the growth horizon here is just through the roof, because there's so many people who need that kind of training. So the horizon looks pretty bright for you guys. Are you guys excited about it? As I'm listening to it, I'm like, yes, this is needed.
I'll let you go with that, Jeff, because my take on this is that things, as much as they change, stay the same. And that's why, you know, there's three decades worth of experience here, yeah. because it's been going on. It just depends at what level and what direction and the ebb and flow. You know, I kind of use and sports isn't a good metaphor for business. It's just not. But, you know, we see football coaches all the time, right? They'll go hire a player's coach and then they'll hire a disciplinarian and they'll hire a player's coach okay. and a disciplinarian. And you see the same thing in the corporate world. They'll go hire an accountant or an engineer to drive something, and then they'll hire somebody who's high in emotional intelligence and not as analytical, because they have to bring the people back together for culture. Okay. And you do this culture to drive the bot, to drive the stock price, okay. to culture to drive, yeah. and it happens, right? And it's always happened. So the key with our business is to really create a leader that is balanced.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's an A.
That has, yeah, that their business acumen is just as high as their emotional intelligence. And by the way, people will say you can't coach emotional intelligence. You can. So yeah. as that starts to happen, then you come up with a leader that is really able to help that organization. And in that, it goes down and is able to help the people in it. So yeah, that's kind of where it is.
Give me an example of how you might be able to coach emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Jeff, because that one's that's Jeff's sure. the coach.
Yeah, that's you actually don't coach the emotional intelligence. You know, so emotional intelligence is a really weird word anyway, because it's not. I mean, our emotions are as smart as they are, but what emotional intelligence, the literature all refers to, is how much our cognition knows about what's going on emotionally, how much we can name it, how much we can enter it into our thinking.
Okay.
So we don't actually coach the emotional intelligence. It's there. Okay. We're born with it, you know.
And, just pulling it out. Yeah.
It's pulling it out. But what we do look at is behavior and impact, intention, impact. And what we try and get the people to do is to look more at the world. Now, talking about the digital age, that's even harder because they're so used to, you know, the emoji world that they, you know, to try and get a real person's reaction. So we have to look at, we can't identify something in another that we can't identify in ourselves.
That's right. Okay.
So if we have someone looking at another person and what's going on and trying to understand it, then we have to reflect it back into what was that like for you? When does that happen for you? Which makes the consciousness look at the emotions, and emotional intelligence, using that term, goes up. So we don't actually coach emotional intelligence. We coach intention and impact.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's really strong. So is it fair to say that in metaphor, you're essentially helping people open eyes?
Yeah.
You're just saying,
wake you up.
Pay attention. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man, that's really good. How did you guys get into this?
I think that's going to be two totally different stories, but
well, it's just a series of choices, but it was all related more and more to trying to make a real difference in the world. Yeah. I mean, that's all. I think Chris and I both share that deal, is that bottom line, we just want to make a positive difference. We want the world to be a better place. We want leaders to be more humane. We want organizations to be more functional, not make people sick. You know,
yeah.
A bad boss can give you cancer, you know, I mean, not today, but you know,
right, over time, yeah.
It's not like, you know, not like coronavirus, we're going to catch it infectiously, but, but those kinds of things, the dis-ease, there's this whole piece that is mythology in the corporate world that says the only way we can get results is by creating fear and anxiety. And driving urgency, which we know is the least healthy place for anyone to live.
Right. And
so leadership styles, these errors of style create diseased organizations and diseased communities. So, you know, I got into it with a series of choices that says, how do I make more and more difference? How do I, and make a living at the same time?
Yeah, it's strange to think panic, fear, stress, yeah, those things are actually yield the best outcome. Like, that is a very bizarre way of thinking about it. And yet, I wonder how much of it in corporate life is not even necessarily thought through. It's just, this is how it was when I was coming through. This is the nature of, once you get past this level in management hierarchy, that's just the way it goes. So it's cool that you guys are actually helping people reevaluate that.
It's the only tool they know. I talk about it like this for golfers. It makes a lot of sense. Find people that learn how to hit one club and they want to play the whole game with that one club, you know, and I only have a driver. So that's all I ever pick up. You know, I'm trying to putt with my driver, things like that, but it's just not that way. But, you know, Chris has got his own story on. He's got
well,
a very
I do.
Path in.
Well, it's funny because Jeff and I have a whole lot in common, even though I don't have a doctorate like Jeff does. Here's the deal, you know. And Jeff, I hate to tell on us, but you know, as much as we understand this and work within the C-suite, both of us started out, you know, had a life as industrial firefighters in the refineries. You know, and so one of the things that happens here that you see is that whether you're working in oil and gas or whether you're working in emergency response or many other places, is that it's a hierarchical culture. Mm-hmm. And that serves its purpose, right? Especially in an emergency. So through time, what I started to notice in my own background was those leaders that came out of that hierarchical culture that got to take care of emergencies never got out of emergency mode.
That's all they do.
Okay. That's all they do. So life comes in, they're aggressive, they come in, they set the objectives. After they set the objectives, they push you. No matter what happens, that objective needs to be accomplished because in their mind, it's life and death, okay? Mm-hmm. In day-to-day. Now, as Americans, we have this great thing in our culture, and that is that we look at leaders, and it's not a bad thing, but we judge them on one point in time. And we say, can you see that they let us out of this one situation or they won this battle or they solved this, right? Well, the problem is leadership in a corporation, we need to look over consistency of a lifespan.
Right.
And if you're always in emergency mode and you're always doing that, what happens is everybody else gets burnt out and you end up standing there by yourself, right? So somewhere along the line, I picked up on that. And then so as I was finishing my master's at A&M, I was going through that and I started to learn. And that was some of the stuff I went to. And then Jeff and I started talking. And by the time the light finally turned on through years of going, you know what, I can drive an organization faster and farther if people are with me and not behind me.
Hmm. Right.
Wow.
And so that's kind of my story as it came through. I've always been fascinated with leadership anyway throughout my life, whether it's the military or whether it's education. But, you know, there's a big part to that. And then what I saw was incredibly as we went into companies and these folks literally sometimes as you were helping them were starting to breathe or going into tears and they understand what happens. Mm. I want to caveat for a minute and just make sure that I kind of set the stage. The other thing that I've learned through here that I think needs to be said is that when you were kids and you were listening to the radio and a song came on that you liked, you would learn it immediately.
Right.
Or when you were in fifth and sixth grade, you could sit there and as they tried to teach you a language, it stuck. Or they tried to, and you could sit there and you could get it. As adults, we don't learn that way. Mm-hmm. We only learn through experience. So that's why now if someone comes on the radio that you really like, you're not going to learn those lyrics and you're going to fumble your way through it. But if you have an experience, then that makes a dent in your brain and you are able to learn and change.
That's right.
And so that's kind of our focus through all of this that we're talking about, our stories and what happens is because of these experiences. And that's what we do in the business. Right. So once we identify what you look like through this assessment, the next thing is to help you through these experiences so you can actually make that change.
Right. So it, you know, the 10 competencies, and I'm not familiar with what the competencies are, but it does seem as though, whereas a typical organization that has this high anxiety, high energy, high stress environment, they will never have the benefit of actually unlocking the latent potential and energy that is in those people. And it seems like by going through the domains, you're actually going to start to open up whole pockets of potential and capability.
Talent. Right. Yeah, if I may add on that, just from the neurology of this, when people are in fear, their thinking moves to a different part of their brain. I mean, all the way from the left frontal lobe around right frontal lobe and then eventually back to no thinking at all. That's just primal instinct.
Right.
But the farther you make along that progression, the more error prone you become and the less open to possibilities. You become very tunnel vision. So by driving crisis perpetually, they essentially make organizations less functional than they could be. And when they open up and start doing it differently, more inspirationally, more aspirationally, thinking moves over to this big picture, wide thing, and innovation occurs a lot. So by driving urgency, you drive out innovation.
It's like putting the blinders on.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. Man, tell me a little bit about this this assessment, the leader nav.
Yeah.
How does that work? And
I
am interested. Yeah. I have never taken this assessment. And
yeah, well, actually, so leader nav is the report, right? So the assessment is a leadership multi-rater, enterprise or individual. But the leader nav is actually the piece that is the big differentiator for what we do. So as that leadership tool comes into play, we can take, let me just say a group of 50 leaders, maybe high potential, soon to be leaders or ones that are already there. And then we can assess them. And then what happens is within this plot map, they end up with a position. Now, depending upon frequency, consistency, and color of that dot, size of that dot that represents them, we know who those folks that are more developed and ready to take the next step are, and those folks that need help. So it's not to leave people out. It just says, hey, we know what your succession pipeline looks like for your organization. So if I have an organization that has 1,500 employees in it, and I know that I have a turnover rate of X, but I also know that I have a growth plan in which they're going to have to move up, then what we can do is we can identify them. We can identify what the challenges are and then work on those challenges so they're ready to take it to the next level.
That's big.
That's the difference. So let me give you an example. So let's say that you're a new tech company and you got together with a bunch of great coders and you had a great product and you built it. And then tomorrow that company is worth $10 million a year. You've grown to 1,000 employees. And guess what? Everybody's a coder.
Right.
So how do we move that from being a coder and having,
I think we know this company.
Do you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that's it. So how do I move having great technical skills into being leaders? Because the idea with that tech company, right, was that we were going to build this in 3 years. We had an exit strategy. We were going to sell, but guess what? You didn't sell.
Right.
So now I'm stuck. Right. I've got to do something. So that's where that comes into play. And so we can go into companies like that and help them. Now the assessment piece is a little different. Mm-hmm. We actually have a whole suite of assessments, but the one we're talking about here is a leadership multi-rater. The term used on the outside is a 360, but there's a difference there. That 360 looks internally and really talks about culture and values. And the 360 ends up being, how do I fit in internally with the group of people I'm working in? Right? Do I fit in with what they push? Ours doesn't do that. Ours is external. It does, but not to the extent. Ours is external and looks to see, do you have that ability to lead based upon core competencies? And can we go in there and help you strengthen those so you can push this company, or excuse me, so you can encourage this company or influence this company forward?
Yeah. Right. It's a behavioral profile is what it is.
Okay.
So, Tell me if I'm thinking about this correctly. So we all know the value of an external audit periodically on healthy organizations. You don't get wrapped up in your own BS. Right. You get a real clear, true assessment of where your books are. Is this an external audit of leadership within the company? Is that close? Am I
to a certain extent, but it's built more behaviorally.
Okay.
It does affect the organization, right? It's all focused on the organization.
Okay. But it's developmental too, right? So it's not just come in, do a diagnostic and then walk away. It sounds like there's a coaching leadership.
There is.
Development piece.
Yeah. So after the assessment's done and the leader nav takes over and gives us this good mapping, what we do is that individual will be debriefed. So they understand what that assessment told them. And then we will come in right after that with a leadership development plan and we will build that plan. This is how we're going to go from point A to where we need to be. Right. And here's the amount of time that's going to take. And then there is group work that's done in there. I'm not going to say that's always a possibility, but the focus on that really is that one individual and helping them through experience get to where they need to be. And that experience may be, you know, any number of tools we use.
who in an organization is, who's making this decision to bring you guys in? Is that straight to the top? Is that a board? What have y'all experienced?
Rarely a board. Sometimes straight to the top, sometimes human resource, top of the house, sometimes more middle. If you look at like a super major
oil company,
super major oil company, they've got so many layers that the CEO has no idea what these mid-level people are doing. You get one small section there and they've got 5,000 people that they're dealing with. So these mid-level people may be bringing us in a section, but it's usually someone who has a purview over a number of people.
Okay. I'm going to share this one story real quick. I was at a conference and there was a C-suite, one of the presidents from a very big oil company. And so I'm redacting all of the names and organizations from
this
story.
Good job, Tim.
Thanks.
Good job,
Tim.
The pain point that they had that they said was the biggest problem they had overarching everything was information downflow was either broken completely or extremely inefficient at best. And so...
So there could be unity and alignment at the very top, but getting that all the way down through all the departments, that was
and usually
a communication glitch.
Okay. It was about two levels down, mid-level executives.
Is that common?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, all right. Dude, that was news to me. We're not that big.
We're in the creative space, so we you know.
So there's two things on that one. One of the main reason that is most people say we get aligned. So now we've spent 3 days in Napa, 14 hours a day, having dinner together, talking about these things, slides, getting a shared mindset. And then we come out and we distill it down to four action items and we give that to the next level. So we give direction without context, without the expansion of thinking. Now, and that's poor interpersonal skills that causes that. So that's part of the issue, and the other part of it is CEO's disease is where at the top level they don't ever get the truth. Everything is filtered coming to them, all the reports are spun, no one tells them the bad things that are happening,
right?
Unless
right.
it's an absolute catastrophe. So they're usually the worst person to tell you how anything is working.
Wow.
So they wouldn't know. They don't know. They're more tuned into analysts on Wall Street than they are to the people in their organization.
Absolutely.
I wanted to hear, what is one success story? What is one, if something sticks out in your mind as, I'll never forget, this guy came in, we worked with him for a while, and then the next thing we knew, this is what was happening in his scene. I'm sure that you guys have tons of those, but I mean, you guys have been doing this now for almost 10 years now, right? Is that just starting 2010?
As in Vision Global Leadership, yes. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Does anything come to mind?
Well,
they come to mind all the time, but go ahead, Jeff, because you have...
No, please. Yeah, go ahead.
There's actually three parts to our business. So yes, there is the assessment portion. We have a group that does training. We actually do, right? So sometimes we have to take off that coaching hat and put on that consulting hat. But often you see those aha moments when it comes to the C-suite, especially with a CEO, when you're sitting in their office and you're having just a general conversation, and all of a sudden the light turns on and they start writing notes on their whiteboard on how they're going to change something that will affect everybody. And all of a sudden you see that what they figured out was how to create a sense of community pretty quick.
Okay.
And when that comes on and they're ready to start including people and the way that, and then all of a sudden that they're smart enough to get there, but how I'm going to communicate that and how that's going to go through and how that's going to go up and down and how we're going to put this together. And they start to flatten that organizational structure.
Okay.
In front of your face after that work, that's when you start to know you've made a difference. When that organizational structure starts to flatten. Right. And they're drawing it up there and they're getting it because it takes time. and you go through. But then you have other people who, you know, they'll call up and go, hey, this has made a big difference in the way I'm behaving in all of these things. Yeah. And so without getting specific into people that this has happened to, you know, you start, but the other thing is you start to see that their bottom line goes up.
Right.
Right.
How did that happen? Right. How all of a sudden are we making more money? I don't understand that.
Right.
Yeah. Just a little caveat on what Chris was just saying. We see organizations flatten themselves. We're not out there trying to drive flat organizations and redesign new organizations, but we find that to be an ancillary of the behavior set. And I spent about a decade in a corporate internal role in a very large company, working around the globe, creating high performance organizations where we work from an organization design perspective and how people work together collaboratively as teams.
Okay.
And they naturally, what you set up though, is they were three levels. Yeah. So we designed major companies that had three levels.
Okay.
And they work phenomenally well when they're working, and they fail like spectacular NASCAR crashes or something like that.
Right. When it doesn't work. Yeah.
When it doesn't. And in my research on these over years and years, kept trying to figure out, why does this one fail? Hmm. Same structure, same culture, same process, everything. This one works, this one works, this one fails. And what I found was it's just a little piece of research that I found from 1942.
Okay.
You know, in out of England, where this, and it drove all this work on what's the natural team leader and natural teams. And it was one British psychotherapist. What he found in his research, which has been replicated many times, was that in a group, in the absence of a clear and aspirational direction, solid leadership, that the most paranoid member of the group emerges as the natural leader.
Wow.
The most paranoid, who'll be the first to find something to run away from and fight, which drives groups into fear, lower order thinking, and making bad decisions.
Wow.
So when I went back and looked at our failures, what I found was it was not a failure in the structure. It was a failure in leadership.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized that there is a style of leadership that drives high performance. And the structures that we used would be a natural outpicturing of that style.
Yeah.
That is wonderful.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So in the successes we've seen, you know, top level executives who just suddenly their life becomes easy. Well, that's the other thing about this. The key feature of these things is that they're not working very hard. They're getting work done, but it's not hard.
Right. So there's something of the nature of this, and I'm kind of running off of a video that y'all shared on your LinkedIn a couple of days or weeks ago. There is something of the nature of this where the success is actually peace. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to look at, like, what's a success factor? Well, people are breathing. Right. They're actually empowered. They're making better decisions.
Right.
There's something of the nature of these unhealthy.
Yeah, they're inspired. They have purpose. They have shared vision, those kinds of things.
Yeah, okay. There's something of an unhealthy organization that feels a little bit like hazing. You know,
absolutely. Yeah, right? Really. Yeah.
And so what is a success marker is an unhazed executive.
Yeah, exactly.
So in the video, and I loved this part of it, you could just kind of, there's people and their shoulders were down and they were like, man, I just feel empowered. And I've got, one guy says, I feel like I've just gone to Home Depot and I've got a tool belt.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Nice tools. I thought that was such a great line.
It was one of our, he's a mid-level executive in a very large company. His career path changed dramatically after that, by the way.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But also his organizations, the people, his, what we also look at is like employee satisfaction and, you know, their people's intention to quit. Mm-hmm. So with these bad leaders, people that you might see make a headline as seen as a successful leader, how they're doing such great stuff. But if you look at their organization, you see that they're disengaged. The people are looking for other jobs, or turnover rates high,
right,
because they're not happy. They're the ones feeling the pain.
Right. Wow.
But been so a successful leader.
So it's true that most people don't leave a job. They leave an employer or a direct report.
A boss.
They
leave a boss. Yeah.
They leave a boss.
But, you know, the opposite's true, too. We've been in organizations where people just sing the praises of their leaders. And you hear, it sounds cliche-ish, but they say, I'd follow her to hell and back. Right. And you hear that and because not only are they loyal, but they feel as if they have value. And so, you know, all of this is this, there's not a nirvana, but the truth of the matter is there are places that do exist like this and have been built that way to work at, and there are companies that are focused on that. And that's the market that we're in, especially if they are a little dysfunctional, we can help out. That's a negative word, but that's where it is.
Yeah. Well, I started this conversation by saying that the thinkers and the trusted advisors such as yourself are the guys that are helping businesses drive. And in that way, you're helping the economy, you're helping our whole national community.
That's so, the intention.
Yeah, you guys are making a difference. Yeah. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah, so one more piece I'm just going to add because name, Envision Global Leadership.
Yes.
Back in the 90s, I guess it was, when we started getting the big mega mergers, where suddenly companies who had an international division are now global. And then they're in all countries in the world except for 3 or 4 or 5. And one executive can make a decision that spans every time zone, 24 hours, cuts every geopolitical boundary on the planet, every religion, every socioeconomic status, more reach than the United Nations.
Right. That's right.
And they suddenly had global in their title. And I was working with these people and they go, I have no idea what this means. How do we, what is global, a global leader? And said, who's doing it? Where do we find out? And you go, Nobody's done this. Not in our history or in our knowledge. So the idea was we had to create a way to do it. You have to figure out how, and that's why we call it envision. We're in the job of envisioning what people want to manifest. And that was our deal, because you can only lead globally through relationships, not through power over.
That's good. That's good,
man. You guys are you're coming in and saying to these executives, if not you, then who?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
fantastic.
Exactly. Well, I'm good.
Well, thank you guys for being on. I'm going to wrap it up and just, man, keep doing what you do, please.
Yeah. Chris, did you have a close on that?
No, I really appreciate you having us on, but I think we will. And, the future, this is one of the jobs in life where you actually get to say you've made a difference. Right. Yes, and so that's, and so we've talked a lot about, how that this is actually a process. I know much of what we talked about today doesn't sound like it, but it is a process that we go through. And there is a step-by-step, actually almost doctrine that goes through here. But at the end of the day, if we're not helping or companies or people, then, we're not doing our job.
Right.
And that's really where we're at. And we want everybody wants to be able to make a living for their families, but on the other side, you want it to be valued. And that's right. That's what EGL is doing.
Yeah. That's right.
That's fantastic.
Well, thank you guys. We've been very honored to have you on.
Pleasure. Yeah. Pleasure.
All right. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Brand Manual Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. We'd be super grateful if you shared. You can find the other episodes on Apple Podcast and Spotify. We'll see you next time on the Brand Manual Podcast.